terrible things to both counsel.
Is that the truth? Okay. We'll move on to the last case of the morning.
Dan, do you want to order them to send what? Us the decision? Do you want to enter an order that they send us the state court decision? I don't know if it'll matter, but...
We can issue that.
Yeah.
We need to. Last case of the morning is Gabe Carey versus Board of Trustees at Purdue. Mr. Conta.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. Judge, my name is Suarez Conte. I'm here on behalf of Dr. Gabe Carey. This case comes before the court from the Northern District of Indiana in Fort Wayne. We have presented four issues before the court. What I'm going to do this morning, Your Honor, is start with the second issue that we raised before the court, and that is whether or not the grant of summary judgment on behalf of Purdue University was correct under Dr. Carey's Title VII claim.
Title VII?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yep.
We believe that, in fact, the judgment of the court in that respect was incorrect. The first thing is the Purdue University raised, and the district court agreed with Purdue University that, in fact, Dr. Carey did not meet his prima facie case of discrimination. The record before the court was very substantial, and we would start with the prima facie case. If you believe that Dr. Carey did not meet a prima facie case, then you have not reviewed the record correctly. Let me give a brief background about Dr. Carey. Dr. Carey came to the United States when he was 19 years old. He obtained his bachelor's degree in 1989 from Hillsdale College in Michigan. In 1992, he obtained his master's degree. And in 1996, he obtained a PhD from the University of Iowa. And during this time, Your Honors, Dr. Carey taught at least four colleges and universities. And during the course of this litigation, he provided releases to Purdue University in order for them to get into his records in all of these schools. And in fact, they did. And what the records show is that, in fact, Dr. Carey has an unblemished history. He has never had a single disciplinary action or any of the type of conduct, a propensity to any of the type of conduct that were involved in this case. Now, around 2000, he was employed at Indiana University, Purdue University in Fort Wayne, as an associate professor in the School of Education. 6 months after he began teaching, he was subject to evaluations. And, well, first of all, in terms of the employment, how do you evaluate a teacher, a professor at a university for promotion or tenure? They look at three areas. They look at teaching, they look at service, and they look at research.
I'm going to stop you, Mr. Conta, because time will, you know, move on. And what I'm wondering is there any evidence that the decision makers had reason to disbelieve the allegations against Dr. Carey or otherwise purposely failed to investigate them, which might indicate that the charges were being used as a pretext upon which to fire him?
Well, Judge, the way you look at that is first look at the source of the allegations themselves. Do you believe the allegations? That's the first thing. And then you can go to that next inquiry. To believe these allegations, Your Honor, you have to really stretch very far. Dr. Carey was evaluated three times by the same one single individual who was involved in this case. In all instances, Dr. Carey's teaching abilities were without question. In fact, during deposition, we asked Dr. Utah, she's one of the leading proponents of the discharge of Dr. Carey, whether or not, in face of all the records before him, Dr. Carey was a bad teacher. He turned the table around and said, no, as far as teaching is very good, it is only his professional conduct. But if you look at all the information that is provided by his peers, Dr. Carey's peers, every single one of them, and who provided that in the record, had nothing but glowing praise for Dr. Carey's teaching abilities. We submitted 10 affidavits from students who, in fact, profess to Dr. Carey's teaching abilities and his professional conduct. These allegations that are the subject of this case came about in 2003, and they have said to have occurred in November, starting to occur in November of 2001. At no time did anybody present these allegations to Dr. Carey. In fact, the impetus, the beginning of those allegations came about because Dr. Carey gave a student a B grade. And one of those students is three, there are three individuals involved in this case. We'd identified the students at VH and SS, and then Dr. Uches, who was the dean of, he was the chair of the department in which Dr. Carey was. These students received a B grade in the summer of 2002. Before that, there were no complaints about Dr. Carey's teaching or professional conduct. She tried to have this grade upgraded by Dr. Carey from a B to an A. He refused because he did not believe she merited an A at that point. She took this to an appellate board, and they also declined. And suddenly, in 2003, Dr. Carey became a monster. And in fact, the record is clear that this student specifically hated Dr. Carey. She even referred to him as a mental case. Suddenly, all these allegations from 2001 came up. And they came up to somebody who also had dislike for Dr. Carey, and that is Dr. Utesh. He has, in many occasions, displayed this disdain for Dr. Carey. He grabbed phones from him. He always quickly refers to his national origin, who he is. These three individuals came together and formed a cabal and produced that information to the last decision maker. And that decision maker did not investigate. There was no independent investigation of these allegations. And in fact, during the deposition, we asked Dr. Utesh, who was the leading proponent of the dismissal of Dr. Carey, whether or not he had individual notes or contemporaneous notes as these complaints were being given to him during the course of Dr. Carey's 3 years in teaching at IPFW. He did not have any. In fact, the handwritten notes that he had were only contemporaneous with the time that he was about to recommend that Dr. Carey not be reappointed as an assistant professor. If you look at this record with all the allegations, you will not find a single affidavit from any student, any faculty member, or anybody else concerning these allegations. They only come from a single source, or a single combined source. The two students were friends, and we also have that on the record. They are very close friends because they worked for Dr. Utesh, who, again, is the leading proponent of the discharge of Dr. Carey. So these three came together. They met in social events and social places and came together and reported this information. So if you look at the root of the information, the question becomes whether or not the last two individuals that decided to terminate Dr. Carey, whether or not they conducted independent investigation.
I can understand what, you know, when you look at the bureaucracy and what was going on behind the scenes and the animosity and the innuendo and all that stuff, that I can understand there's resentment. But the two things that come out in the, you know, very detailed district court opinion that focus on, that is whether Dr. Carey was meeting the expectations, and this is on the prima facie area, and whether there was a similarly situated person who was treated more favorably. And a lot of the objections here in the brief and everything are these hearsay statements that different people have said about, I guess, race issues on the campus and in the city. I guess that's what you need to focus on here, because we're when you look at this thing in review, we have to evaluate this not about what different personalities may have been and maybe there's some animosity. We have to focus on the basis of the discrimination under Title VII and why there's a prima facie case and why what they did isn't is pretext as opposed to a legitimate non-discriminatory reason.
Well, Judge, take the whether or not he met the legitimate teaching expectation.
Okay, that's backing it up, but anyway,
right.
It ultimately comes.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the three criteria. There was no question that he was extraordinary in research. There's no question that he did very well in service. Now, in terms of the teaching, the university chancellor testified that there are only three. What do you use to determine whether or not he's an effective teacher? You use evaluations from students, P peer evaluations, and somebody who just left the class. If you look at all those three, it is Dr. Carey's performance, in terms of very good performance, significantly overwhelms the other side. And as I pointed out, there are only two students who came up and said, Dr. Carey is not an effective teacher. And this is a college that had Dr. Carey taught over 20 students at the time. Not one of them complained. So if you have to believe, if you believe them, then you will believe what the district court came up with. But then you're getting into the credibility assessment issue, which this court has said is not appropriate for a summary judgment review. Because then you are now sitting as a judge to determine who's credible. If you disbelieve these students, then Dr. Carey was a very good teacher. And every evidence indicates that it is more likely to disbelieve these students than believe them because they had a motive for the complaint that they filed against Dr. Carey.
So he was denied, he was terminated because of his race.
Well, the person who received this information had exhibited, and as Dr. Carey put it, he had this dislike for African Americans. If you look at that school of education where he's a professor, at the time Dr. Carey was there, there were only two African American teachers there, two minority professors. She left, one of them left, and Dr. Carey was the second to leave in 2003. In fact, as of today, there is none in that faculty. So, and every comment that he made several comments that we cited in our brief concerning how minorities have the propensity to toot their horns about who they are. He made comments about certain minority students, their capabilities, and he frequently had no respect for Dr. Carey. He did not do this to any of, there is no evidence that he did any of these to the other faculty members in the School of Education. So, and if you look at the group and you look at what he did to Dr. Carey, you have no other conclusion. If you believe Dr. Carey was a very good teacher, which the record demonstrates, then you have no other conclusion but to say that, in fact, the basis for this decision was grounded not on Dr. Carey's performance, not on his conduct, but on his race, because he was the only black professor that was in that school at the time the adverse job action was taken. So, in terms of similarly situated, we did point out to the court that, in fact, there were other professors in that faculty who had, in fact, student protest against them.
Who is your best example of a similarly situated individual who was treated differently?
Well, there are two of them. The one was accused of not citing properly to sources, and the other, we had them on the seal. I don't know if it's appropriate for me to name them, but one of them had about about 14 students or more protested. They told the university that this individual is not a good teacher. There was a protest about that. Nothing was done to her.
Is he non-tenure?
Well, the person is tenured now. The person is tenured
that's
now.
That's another subject, as you know.
Yeah, Judge, and the difficulty about this is you have a group of individuals who are going along very well, and then you have one person coming that is different from them.
You got examples, I guess, of non-tenured people that did the same thing? Or
well, one of them just got recently tenured, the one that had an allegation about plagiarism. That person has become tenured since this lawsuit came into being. But they treated that person differently. They did not. He was not subject to disciplinary action.
Was he in this part of the school? I forget. Education?
The person is part of the School of Education.
And what's the guy's name?
Sheena Choi.
Whatever his name is. The guy that you're criticizing.
Dr. Utesh.
Yeah, Utesh.
Utesh.
Did he have anything to do with the other guy? Woman or whatever?
Well, they were all in the same school of education, and he is the chair of one of the departments of education.
Was he the decision maker that didn't terminate the other fellow?
He is a decision maker, Your Honor. And I think I reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay. Klingerman.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is Trent Klingerman. I represent the appellee.
Could I just ask you, were there any other non-tenured professors with negative evaluations or comments from students who nevertheless were allowed to continue to teach?
The answer to your question, Judge Rovner, is there is evidence in the record that others had received negative teaching evaluations and were reappointed. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about an assistant professor who works on an annual appointment. Purdue University made the decision to not reappoint his contract. That's what we're talking about. This is not a termination in the middle of an appointment contract. It's not a denial of promotion. It's not a denial of tenure. This is a decision made for legitimate and non-discriminatory reasons to not reappoint Dr. Carey's contract.
Okay,
but the question should be, Judge Rovner, not whether others have been reappointed despite negative student complaints or negative cafeteria evaluations in the record. Dr. Carey himself was reappointed under those circumstances. The question should be whether or not any person, tenured, non-tenured, we say it has to be an assistant professor who is non-tenured, that's who's similarly situated to Dr. Carey, after all, has been accused of conduct the likes of which Dr. Carey has been accused of. Dr. Carey has been accused of harassment. The university came forward with evidence of harassment. With respect to Mr. Conte, he has gone far outside the record to demonstrate some things about Dr. Carey that I don't think are true. For one, there's no record at all before this court or before the district court as to Dr. Carey's unblemished record, as Mr. Conte put it, in his previous employment. It's not relevant to this court's analysis anyways.
Well, then let me ask you this. My understanding is that the employment decision was based on the allegations of harassment and otherwise inappropriate behavior with students, right?
Well, that's right.
Okay, so were there other teachers with similar allegations who were allowed to remain at the school?
There were not in the School of Education. There's no evidence of that in this record. And there were not. It's very simple. There is no evidence of similarly situated employees at all in this case. That's what the district court found, and that's the only conclusion that this court could come to on this record. The arguably simple, you asked Mr. Conte, the best examples you have are a female professor who, in 1997, while she was tenured, had a petition circulated that said that she was an ineffective teacher. She was a poor teacher. She was tenured at the time that this petition was circulated, and the record is silent as to what became of that, what counseling or whatever type of discipline occurred to her after that. We just don't know. It's not in the record. Not similar at all to Dr. Carey. She was tenured. Dr. Carey was not. The allegations, the gravity of the allegations, harassment as opposed to ineffective teaching, completely different, not a similar situation. The other professor that Mr. Conte says his best comparator, this is his best comparator, is an Asian female, tenure track professor, assistant professor, in the School of Education, who was accused of a poor citation in a scholarly work. Completely different protocols, completely different investigation. You have the discipline policy under which Dr. Carey was investigated before you in the record. But to be clear, these allegations didn't just come up in 2003. These allegations began in November of 2001. Dr. Utesh, the department chair, and Dr. Carey both testified on deposition that there were counseling sessions, that Dr. Utesh brought these to his attention. Dr. Carey protested that he didn't have the identity of the students at the time he did, that Dr. Utesh wouldn't reveal that confidence to him.
Yeah, because the briefs refer to a conversation at the Summit City Racquet Club between Dr. Utesh and some of the students who complained of Dr. Carey's conduct. Now, was that conversation before the students filed the complaints, and what information do we have in the record concerning the substance of that conversation?
You don't have anything in the record regarding the substance of that conversation. You don't have anything in the record regarding the timing of that conversation. VH and SS, I think both testified, at least VH testified, I know, on deposition, that that conversation took place. By the way, what VH says about that conversation is that they were approaching Dr. Utesh in his capacity as chair to voice displeasure with one of Dr. Utesh's employees, Dr. Carey. But they didn't feel comfortable always going to Dr. Utesh in the hallway because they didn't know whether this information was getting back to Dr. Carey. You have to understand that these are students who are in some manner both they're student employees, actually, and in two very material ways are reliant upon Dr. Carey, both in his capacity as teacher, and also he was a supervisor of the counseling center in which both of these students worked.
Will the record bear out the allegation that one of these students received a B and went and requested an A? And
what the record will show, Your Honor,
was rebuffed on that?
What the record will show is that VH was disappointed that she received the only B that she had received during her period as a student at IPFW, that she properly invoked the grade appeal procedures that is available to her as a student at IPFW, that she pursued her grade appeal to the point to where she couldn't pursue it any longer, that the decision went against her. This is not a decision only by Dr. Carey. This is a decision by a grade appeal board. The decision went against her. Was she upset that she got a B? Yes, she appealed it. She exhausted her remedies, and that's where it ended. There's no evidence that her getting a B was the primary motivation. And by the way, if her getting a B was the primary motivation, then her primary motivation still wasn't race or national origin. But there is no evidence that the fact that she got a B was the motivation for her bringing this complaint forward, first to Dr. Utesh, and then filing a formal student harassment complaint, which is a separate matter altogether. The student harassment complaint was filed after the determination was made not to reappoint Dr. Carey's annual contract. SS and VH each filed a student harassment complaint, a formal written complaint against Dr. Carey. That was investigated pursuant to Purdue policy by an investigator who completely supports the fact that Dr. Carey behaved inappropriately. Now, they will point to the fact, Dr. Carey will point to the fact, that SS's claim was time-barred and view that as an exoneration. What Dr. Blakemore, the investigator, found was SS's complaint was completely consistent with the testimony of student witnesses across four cohorts. That's four classes of independent students that take the same courses together. So across four cohorts, I don't remember the precise number, but a substantial number, more than two, as Mr. Conte represented, voiced the same concerns and the same types of behavior that both SS and VH memorialized in formal written complaints. The fact that VH and SS formalized them, again, after the determination was made to terminate or to not reappoint Dr. Carey, is only further evidence in the record before this court that there was a legitimate and a non-discriminatory reason for not reappointing Dr. Carey. So you have two bases without ever getting to the burden shift, without ever getting to the pretext, the legitimate non-discriminatory reason under Dr. Carey's Title VII claim. You have two independent bases to uphold the district court's entry of summary judgment in favor of Purdue, and that is the two that you've already pointed out. First, no similarly situated comparators. Second, Dr. Carey was not meeting legitimate employment expectations. There's no dispute in the record that Dr. Carey was a fine researcher. Even Vice Chancellor Hannah, who's the decision maker in this case, she's the one that had to split the difference between the dean, who recommended one more chance for Dr. Carey, and the department head, who said he's had enough chances, no more chances for Dr. Carey. Vice Chancellor Hannah, who Dr. Carey testified on deposition that he had no evidence that she was in any manner biased against racial or ethnic minorities, no evidence whatever. She's the one that made this decision, and there's no evidence of the record that she did so for any other reason except for a legitimate, non-discriminatory one, his behavior. So you have research. He was fine. There's no evidence that he was a poor researcher. We're not saying that. You have service. His service was satisfactory. That's all it had to be reappointed. What he tries to do, what Dr. Carey tries to do, is say, my teaching was also satisfactory. Look at these students. They say it was. Look at the peer review, which the district court properly found has no force of a recommendation. This is just a professor asking another one to come into his classroom and at a pre-planned time to view the lesson that he wants to provide. But you cannot separate the classroom delivery of instruction from Dr. Carey's behavior in the classroom and outside the classroom. That all comes within teaching. It's perfectly legitimate for Dr. Utesh and for Vice Chancellor Hannah to determine that that is not satisfactory, that is not okay behavior for an assistant professor in the School of Education. If you do believe you have to get to the burden shift in Dr. Carey's Title VII claim, there's been no evidence of pretext, no evidence that the decision made by Purdue was pretext for racial bias or for bias against ethnic minorities. None whatsoever. At most, you have a student who was scorned by a grade that she didn't feel she deserved. That's not racial bias. That's not national origin bias. Dr. Carey has also asserted several other claims in this action. The only defendant before the court is the trustees of Purdue University. The trustees of Purdue University is immune from liability on Dr. Carey's Section 1981, Section 1995, 3, and Section 1986 claims. The district court properly held that it was. This court in Kashani, the case that Dr. Carey relies upon to show how we haven't set a sufficient factual predicate for as to whether Purdue is in fact immune, is actually this court's holding that Purdue is immune as a matter of law. The court also addressed the merits of the constitutional claims that Dr. Carey asserts, found that the actors who are not named defendants and were all employees of the university, therefore his conspiracy claim is barred by the intracorporate agency doctrine, and Dr. Carey failed to offer any evidence that Virginia VHSS and Dr. Utesh were acting for any other purpose except for the furtherance of the university. Dr. Carey has waived by not appealing his retaliation claim. And there also exist several state court claims that have been briefed. Those claims rose under the same transaction or occurrences as the federal claims, and the court exercised its discretion to determine those claims in favor of Purdue and did so correctly.
Is it in fact the law that on this 180-day notice, is that open and shut?
That's statutory, Your Honor.
I know it is. I thought there may be some case law that was nudging away from that.
What the distinction that was made by Dr. Carey in the district court is a distinction made by a case called Orem versus Vincennes or Ivy Tech. It's a community college in Indiana. And the distinction was, in that case, a wrongful termination claim. And it wasn't the 180-day notice. It wasn't a substantial compliance issue. It was, when do we say the cause of action accrued for the purposes of starting the 180-day clock ticking. They held in a wrongful termination case that the cause of action accrues on the day that you separate employment, even if you know...
Not the date of notification.
Not the date of notification. But the basis for summary judgment under the Tort Claims Act in this case was the court entered summary judgment in favor of Purdue on the Tort Claim Act's issue on the IIED, intentional infliction of emotional distress and negligent infliction of emotional distress, finding properly that those causes of action certainly accrued at the date of notification, waiting until the actual separation of employment wasn't proper. Dr. Carey testified on deposition that when he got the notice, he was upset.
So it's not a matter of exhausting administrative remedies that sets the time. It's a question of the notification.
It's a question of...
You've got to notify the defendant so they can do whatever they're supposed to do, and it has to be 180 days.
Evaluate the claim. It's a question not even of notification. It's a question of accrual of your cause of action. When did your cause of action accrue? When did you experience emotional distress?
Well, I know that. That's when the 180 days begins.
Yes.
But the fact is you've got to have that notification.
That's right.
Okay.
And it's a statutory bar to any tort action under Indiana law.
Okay.
Thank you. I see my time has expired.
Mr. Conte, got some time? Got 1 minute, Mr. Conte.
Your Honor, the first issue I want to address is the notification issue. The court in Oregon did say that, in fact, the notification under the ITCA is not a statute of limitation. So, therefore, the court decided that it's not the day that the decision was announced. Rather, it's the day that the adverse action actually took place. This is what happened in this case. Dr. Carey was actually terminated May 2004. And the statute of the notice itself was on time, and the court found that in two of the state claims. Now, the 1985-86 claims, we did indicate that in fact this court has said that there is an exception to that doctrine if the people who participated in the conspiracy were not doing it in furtherance of the benefits of the corporation. In this case, we believe that, in fact, one of the conspirators in this case was merely doing this as a vengeance for, in fact, what the B grade that she received rather than promoting the interest of Purdue University. Now, the sexual harassment complaint investigation, Your Honor, in fact, the record is clear. It was a very flawed investigation. The people who were asked were only those that were provided by the parties. This is not an independent investigation, and the complaints themselves were way before, in 2001. The complaint was filed in 2003. That is, in fact, contrary to the procedures that have been established by Purdue University.
Okay, your time's up there.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. This case will be taken under advisement, and that completes the argument for today, and the court will be in recess until further notice.